Assembly Committee on Police. Also welcome to the Civilian Secretariat, as well as the South African Police Service Legal Division. Also welcome to civil society, as well as members of the media and other role players. Honourable members, maybe just to recap, members will remember then that we were supposed to deal with the B Bill of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill on Wednesday, but the 2nd of May. But unfortunately, as you might know, the relevant bill wasn't printed correctly, and we instructed Parliament's Committee Section to ensure that it's done. Members, just maybe before we start, just in terms of next week's program, I just want to just again indicate to members our plan. In terms of Tuesday, members will remember there is going to be a joint meeting with the Sports Committee on the circumstances surrounding the violent and chaos scenes at Moses Mabhida Stadium on 21st of April. There will be a briefing by the Premier Soccer League, as well as by the National Commissioner and the police. And that specific meeting is starting at 9:30, not 9 o'clock, 9:30. So I just want to alert members. We will be with that meeting for about 2 hours, depending on how long the item will be on the agenda, and then we will continue with our own meeting, dealing with the infrastructure bill, if we're not finished today, or alternatively with the budget reports. And then members, Wednesday the 9th, again on the agenda is the critical infrastructure bill or the budget reports. The budget reports is supposed to be ready and available to members, but we'll come to that briefly. And then on Friday the 11th, we will have the fourth quarterlies by IFET as well as the CSP. So next week is quite jam-packed before the budget vote on Tuesday. So I just want to alert members with regard to the program. Honourable members, we will now go to the first item, the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill. I just want to inquire, where's the committee secretary?
Well, yeah, I think she went to go and find it with a copy, so because it was supposed to have been here this morning.
That is quite problematic. That we don't. Is that the copies? Yeah, I just want to again urge the committee section of Parliament to ensure that they do proper planning, proper preparation, and ensure that documents are distributed early so that members have an opportunity to look at that. And also the electronic versions. Unfortunately, it's the second time this week that the committee section of Parliament hasn't risen to the occasion, and really that is not good enough. In terms of performance, they will really have to improve. We don't have to bill at this stage. I think what we will do, we will just take a quick break, and we'll come back. Okay. Right. The committee's unhappiness about the performance of the committee section of Parliament. I've raised the matter telephonically with the House Chairperson. I will also be writing to him so that the necessary steps be taken to ensure that there is the necessary performance with regard to the making availability of the necessary documents to members so that we can fulfill our oversight duty. Right, members, let's then go to the business of the day. The new B-Bill has been made available to members. Members will remember that we will now go through the bill, clause by clause, and of course we will then look at the the A-list and see if everything is included in terms of the bill. There's just one clause that I want to bring it to on the attention of members before we continue. We received on Monday a letter from one of the civil society organizations raising some concerns with regard to the public interest definition. Now, our view was that let's ask the parliamentary legal advisers to get on that specific clause for us an outside opinion in terms of the issues that's being raised by the civil society organization. So we won't deal with Section 26 today. We will await for that opinion, and then we will deal with it. Because we want to ensure that the clauses are all clauses are constitutional and in line with the Constitution. So that is going to be our approach. So we're going to deal with all other clauses except that specific one. So that means if we finish all the clauses today, next week, we will await the opinion, and as soon as that opinion is available, we will then go back to that specific clause and then deal with it. I just want to bring that on the attention of the members. Right, members, we will then go to the front page. It is B22B of 2017, the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill. It's now also on the screen, and of course the drafting team, also welcome to the State Legal Advisor joining us today as well. If there's any questions of clarification, the team is available, and members, please feel welcome to, if there's anything you want to, bring up, please indicate that. Now, members, I'm going to start on page 2 of the bill and read through it, and then we'll take it clause by clause. Bill, to provide for the identification and declaration of infrastructure as critical infrastructure, to provide for guidelines and factors to be taken into account to ensure transparent identification and declaration of critical infrastructure, to provide for measures to be put in place for the protection, safeguarding and resilience of critical infrastructure, to provide for the establishment of the Critical Infrastructure Council and its functions, to provide for the administration of the Act under the control of the National Commissioner, as well as the functions of the National Commission in relation to the Act, to provide for the establishment of committees and their functions, to provide for the designation and functions of inspectors, to provide for the powers and duties of persons in control of critical infrastructure, to provide for reporting obligations, to provide for transitional arrangements, to provide for the repeal of the National Key Points Act 1980 and related laws, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Then the preamble, whereas the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa 1996 provides that all spheres of government and all organs of state must secure the well-being of the people of the Republic, and whereas the Constitution of the Republic provides for the right of access to information, subject to the limitations provided for in Section 36 of the Constitution, and whereas the protection of critical infrastructure is essential for public safety, national security, and the continuous provision of basic public services, and where it's necessary to put in place adequate measures to identify and protect critical infrastructure and the implementation of those measures in order to secure critical infrastructure. Mindful of the need to follow objective criteria with regard to the identification and declaration of critical infrastructure, and further mindful of the need for the roles, responsibilities and accountability of parties with regard to the protection of critical infrastructure to be defined, and for the enhancement of public confidence and awareness in respect of the protection of critical infrastructure, and realizing the need to enhance cooperation between government and the private sector with regard to the protection of critical infrastructure in the interest of the Republic. Members, is there anything there? Agreed to? Can we get a proposal for that page? Honourable Lamadlakane, seconder, Honourable Malabatsi. We then go to page 3. Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, therefore, enacts as follows. Arrangements of Section Chapter 1, Definitions, Purpose and Application of Act. Definitions, Purpose of Act, Application of Act. Chapter 2, Critical Infrastructure Council and Structures, Part A. Critical Infrastructure Council. 4, Establishment and Composition of Critical Infrastructure Council. 5, disqualification from appointment as member of Critical Infrastructure Council. 6, funding and remuneration. 7, functions of Critical Infrastructure Council. 8, meetings of Critical Infrastructure Council. Part B, administration of Act. 9, functions of National Commissioner. 10, designation of inspectors. 11, functions of inspectors. Part C, committees, exemption and delegations. 12, ad hoc and standing committees. 13, exemption of certain persons. 14, delegations of powers. 15, reporting by ministers. Chapter 3, declaration as critical infrastructure and determination of critical infrastructure complex. 16, power of minister to declare critical infrastructure and determine critical infrastructure complex. 17, factors to be taken into account in declaration of critical infrastructure. 18, application for declaration as critical infrastructure by person in control. 19, application for declaration as critical infrastructure by national commissioner. 20, declaration as critical infrastructure. 21, certificate of declaration as critical infrastructure. 22, amendment or variation of information or conditions by minister. 23, termination and revocation of declaration. Proposal, Honourable Ramatakane, seconder. Honourable Mabiyicha. Colleagues, then we go to page 4, and I think that's where some of the amendments is going to be relevant in terms of the A-list. I don't know whether members got the A-list with them, or whether we should again, we did that the previous day, but again highlight maybe those changes. I just want to hear from the House.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think it would be useful if we just get just a highlighting of where key changes were made, because it's a lot of information to process, so each instance would be useful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Honourable Mbele. The drafting team, the Brigadier, indicated that those amended version will be highlighted in the text. But I mean, Brigadier and Advocate, at any time, please, if we come to that specific section, just please alert me, because I'm going to deal with the hard copy for purposes of reading it. So please intervene at any stage so that members are with us at all times. Colleagues, then we're on page 4. Chapter 4, powers and duties of persons in control of critical infrastructure. 24, powers and duties of persons in control of critical infrastructure. 25, access to critical infrastructure. Chapter 5, offences and penalties. 26, offences and penalties. Chapter 6, regulations. 27, regulations. Chapter 7, general and transitional provisions. 28, administrative justice. 29, repeal of legislation. 30, transitional arrangements. 31, indemnity against loss or damage. 32, short title and commencement. Chapter 1, definitions, purpose and application of Act. Then we come to the definitions. In this Act, unless the context indicates otherwise, I think the first one is still the same. The basic public service includes a service, whether provided by the public or private sector, relating to communication, energy, health, sanitation, transport and water, the interference with which may prejudice the livelihood, well-being, daily operations or economic activity in the public. Then we come to the first change, then green on the screen. Critical infrastructure, and that includes now the complex in the last part of the sentence. Critical infrastructure means any infrastructure which is declared as such in terms of Section 24, and includes a critical infrastructure complex where required by the context. Right. Members, I'm going to continue. Then the next one is the definition of critical infrastructure complex. Means more than one critical infrastructure grouped together for practical or administrative reasons, which is determined as such in terms of Section 16.3. Then the Critical Infrastructure Council means the Critical Infrastructure Council established in terms of Section 4, and Council has a corresponding meaning. Then Cyber Response Committee means any cyber response committee established in terms of any cyber security legislation. Then disaster management center includes the national center, provincial disaster management center, and municipal disaster management center as defined in section 1 of the Disaster Management Act 2002, Act number 57 of 2002. Then we come to another amendment, Green. That whole definition has been inserted. Government infrastructure for the purpose of section 9.4, and section 19 means infrastructure controlled, owned, occupied, or possessed by a government department in the national sphere, and in respect of whose operation or administration that department is responsible. Then the definition of head of government means A, the incumbent of a post mentioned in column 2 of schedule 1, 2 and 3 to the Public Service Act 1994, proclamation number 103 of 1994, and includes any person acting in such post or. Honourable members, can we get a proposal? Honourable Molubatsi, seconder. Thank you, Honourable Ramatlakane. Members, let me continue to page 5. I think there's some changes on that page, and it's also reflected in the green. Then at the top of the page, B, a municipal manager appointed in terms of section 54A of the Local Government Municipal Systems Act 2000, Act number 32 of 2000, and includes any person acting in such post. Infrastructure, colleagues will see that last part has been inserted, starting with but excludes. And the whole definition is as follows. Infrastructure means any building, center, establishment, facility, installation, pipeline, premises or systems needed for the functioning of society, the government or enterprises of the Republic, and includes any transport network or network for the delivery of electricity or water, but excludes any information infrastructure as contemplated in any legislation on cybersecurity. So that's that exclusion clause that we've, I think, discussed it in quite detail during the process. Colleagues, then the National Commissioner means the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service, appointed in accordance with section 2071 of the Constitution. National security has the meaning ascribed to it in section 198 of the Constitution. Organ of state means an organ of state as defined in section 239 of the Constitution. Then a person in control of infrastructure, there's also two lines that's been highlighted there. Person in control of critical infrastructure means that A, the owner of a critical infrastructure, the person who by virtue of Roman 1, any right acquired from a person referred to in paragraph A, Roman 2, any other right acquired from any other person, whether by way of a public-private partnership or similar agreement, or 3, Roman operation of law. Occupies, possesses, is in control of, or is responsible for the operation or administration of such a critical infrastructure. Or C, the head of a government department or the head of any other organ of state who occupies, possesses, is in control of, or is responsible for the operation or administration of a critical infrastructure and includes any employee acting in such post, and person in control of any infrastructure shall be construed accordingly. That last part, person in control of infrastructure, was included during the process. Then we go to police official. The definition, police official means a member of the South African Police Service as defined in section 1 of the South African Police Service Act 1995, Act number 68 of 1995. And prescribe means prescribed by regulation. And colleagues will remember the SIRA clause that was raised during the deliberations. SIRA means the Private Security Industry Regulatory Authority, established in terms of section 2.1 of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act 2001, Act number 56 of 2001. Then regulatory measures means any security measure that must be implemented as provided for in this Act. Resilience means the ability of infrastructure to mitigate, absorb, or withstand any damage, disruption, disturbance, or interference in order to maintain the functionality, integrity, and structural capacity of that infrastructure. Then risk category means a risk category as contemplated in Section 24. Then Secretary for the Police Service means the Secretary for the Police Service appointed in terms of Section 7(1) of the Civilian Secretariat for the Police Service Act 2011, Act No. 2 of 2011. Then security includes but is not limited to physical security of critical infrastructure, B, personal security at critical infrastructure, C, contingency plans applicable to critical infrastructure, and D, measures aimed at protecting critical infrastructure. The security manager means the person appointed in terms of Section 24-7. Security measures means any physical security measure to preserve the availability, integrity, or confidentiality of a critical infrastructure, and includes but is not limited to physical security measures to protect A, any part or component of a critical infrastructure, B, any physical structure that partly consists of or incorporates or houses information infrastructure, or C, personnel or other persons at or nearby a critical infrastructure. Then security personnel means any person registered as a security officer in terms of Section 21 of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act 2001, Act No. 56 of 2001. And then a security service provider means a security service provider as defined in Section 1 of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act 2001. So colleagues, that is then page 5, a proposal from Honorable Ramatakane, seconded Honorable Bulabatsi. Thank you, colleagues. Colleagues, then we move to page 6. At the top of the page, this Act includes the regulations, and threat includes any action or omission of a criminal, terrorist, or accidental nature which may potentially cause damage, harm, or loss to critical infrastructure or interfere with the ability or availability of critical infrastructure to deliver basic public services, and may involve any natural hazard which is likely to increase the vulnerability of critical infrastructure to such actions or omission. So that is also part of the definition. Then we go to Clause 2, the purpose of the Act. Clause 2, the purpose of this Act is to secure critical infrastructure against threats. Then B, there's been an inclusion of security measures. B, ensure that information pertaining to security measures applicable to critical infrastructure remains confidential, subject to the Promotion of Access to Information Act 2000, Act No. 2 of 2000, or any other Act of Parliament that provides for the lawful disclosure of information. C, ensure that objective criteria are developed for the identification, declaration, and protection of critical infrastructure. D, ensure public-private cooperation in identification and protection of critical infrastructure. E, secure critical infrastructure in the Republic by creating an environment in which public safety, public confidence, and basic public services are promoted. Roman 1, through the implementation of measures aimed at securing critical infrastructures. And 2, Roman, by mitigating risks to critical infrastructures through assessment of vulnerabilities and the implementation of appropriate measures. F, promote cooperation and a culture of shared responsibility between various role players in order to provide for an appropriate multidisciplinary approach to deal with critical infrastructure protection. G, enhance the collective capacity of role players who are responsible for the protection of critical infrastructure to mitigate possible security risks. H, ensure that every critical infrastructure complies with regulatory measures aimed at securing such critical infrastructure against threats. And then I, provide for the powers and duties of persons in control of critical infrastructure, and J, support integration and coordination of the functions of various role players involved in the securing of critical infrastructure. Honourable members, I then put section clause 2, Honourable Ramatlakane proposal, second Honourable Malabatsi. Colleagues, we will then go to clause 3, application of Act 3.1. This Act applies to A, the Identification Act and Declaration of Infrastructure as Critical Infrastructure, B, the Determination of Critical Infrastructure as Critical Infrastructure Complex, and C, the Protection of Critical Infrastructure, and binds any person to whom a function has been assigned in terms of this Act. 2, this Act does not apply to infrastructure under the control of the Department of Defence. Honourable members, that is then clause 3. Proposal for adoption, Honourable Ramatlakane, seconder, Honourable Molobatsi. Thank you very much. Colleagues, we move on to Chapter 2, Critical Infrastructure Council and Structures, Part A. Critical Infrastructure Council, the establishment and composition of the Critical Infrastructure Council, that's also a new inclusion. The whole clause is a new inclusion, Honourable members, that sets out the establishment and composition of the Critical Infrastructure Council in 4.1a. A Critical Infrastructure Council is hereby established. 2. The Minister appoints members of the Critical Infrastructure Council, which must consist of the following persons: A, the Secretary for the Police Service. Then, colleagues, we go to page 7b. An official at the level of at least chief director or an equivalent level designated by the heads of the following institutions: Roman 1, Department of Defense, Roman 2, Department of Home Affairs, Roman 3, Department of Public Works, Roman 4, National Disaster Management Center, Roman 5, South African Local Government Association, 6, South African Police Service, and 7, State Security Agency. And C, 5 members appointed in terms of subsection 8 from the private sector and civil society who are Roman 1 not disqualified in terms of section 5, and Roman 2 preferably appropriately qualified, knowledgeable and experienced in fields that include critical infrastructure protection, risk management, disaster management or basic public services. 3. The members of the council must, when viewed collectively, preferably be persons who are suited to serve the council by virtue of their qualifications, expertise and experience in the fields that includes infrastructure protection, engineering, disaster management or security policy. 4. In the event that A, the functions or function of infrastructure that forms the subject of an application for declaration as critical infrastructure may affect or be affected by the functional area of responsibility of a government department or an organ of state not referred to in subsection 2b, the chairperson may request the head of that government department or the head of that organ of state to designate an appropriately qualified official to assist with such application. Or B, the council is of the opinion that any other person could assist in general or with a specific application for declaration as critical infrastructure, the council may request the minister to appoint such person on an ad hoc basis to advise or assist the council. 5. The minister must appoint A, officials referred to in subsection 2b after consultation with a cabinet member responsible for the institution in question. B, members referred to in subsection 2c in terms of subsection 8. And C, persons referred to in subsection 4b on advice of the council. 6. In the event that it is necessary to appoint a member referred to in section 2c, subsection 2c, the minister must request the National Assembly to submit a list of candidates for appointment. 7. The speaker must refer the matter to the relevant committee of the National Assembly to A, publish a notice in the Gazette and in at least 2 national newspapers circulating in the Republic, inviting applications from interested persons and members of the public to to nominate persons. B, compile a short list of not less than 20 persons who are not disqualified in terms of subsections Section 5A, C, D, E, or F from the applications and nominations referred to in paragraph A, or persons serving on the council who qualify for further appointment in terms of subsection 10. C, submit the list referred to in paragraph B to the State Security Agency for consideration and issuing of a top secret security clearance. D, conduct interviews with the persons referred to in paragraph B who are not disqualified in terms of section 5B for purpose of compiling a list of 10 recommended candidates in order of preference. E, submit the list of names referred to in paragraph D to the National Assembly for approval. And F, submit the proof list of names contemplated in paragraph E together with their resumes to the minister. Then 8, the minister must appoint 5 members to the council from the list referred to in subsection 7F and publish the names of the members in the Gazette. 9, subject to subsection 12, a member of the council appointed in terms of subsection 8 holds office for a period not exceeding 5 years. 10, upon the expiry of an appointed member's first term of office as contemplated in subsection 9, the member may be reappointed for one further term only. Right, members, thank you. Then we go to page 8. We continue with clause 4. 11, the secretary for the police service is the chairperson of the council, and the minister must designate from the persons contemplated in subsection 2C a member as deputy chairperson. 12, a member of the council appointed in terms of subsection 8 must vacate office if that member A resigns by giving at least 30 days written notice addressed to the minister, or B is removed from the office by the minister as contemplated in subsection 14. 13, if a member of the council appointed in terms of subsection 8 resigns or vacates office before the expiry of his or period of office, the minister must request the National Assembly to follow the procedure in subsection 7, provided that the minister may appoint a new member from the list contemplated in subsection 7D, where candidates on that list are still available for appointment. 14, the minister may, after due process by the National Assembly, remove a member of the council appointed in terms of subsection 8 from office on account of A, absence from 3 consecutive meetings without good cause, B, misconduct, incapacity or incompetence, C, become disqualified as contemplated in section 5, or D, any other lawful reason. 15, the minister may suspend a member where there are reasonable grounds to do so until the process contemplated in subsection 14 is finalized. Just a moment, yes?
Rob, before we move on, could I just ask a question? In terms of the due process, if a member misses 3 consecutive meetings, due process, it comes through Parliament and then is signed off by the Minister. Who is going to tell, I presume, this committee that that person has missed 3 meetings? Where is the oversight ability for us to know or to hear? I mean, are we relying on other board members to come running to us and say, by the way, that guy missed 3 meetings? Do we get the minutes? How do we know? Because there can't be a process unless the process is started. And I'm pretty sure no board is going to kickstart its own process to have a member kicked off. So I'm very interested to hear the legal eagles tell us how that exactly is going to work. Thank you.
Member on this matter, Honourable Ramatakani, you're welcome.
No, I think it's an important question, Chair, but I thought that some of the matter must be picked up in the regulations. The detailed regulations should be able to provide for that, unless maybe there is a different view. But because of the specificness and the detailness of that, it should be picked up by the regulation. But maybe the question is, after the finalization of the act, how fast will the regulation be made available in order for operationalization of the act itself?
It has been, we decided long ago, a standard procedure that regulations would come to this committee. I don't recall seeing any for a very long time, but I do know that, for example, on the second-hand goods bill, the regulations took about 3 years to be created. So that bill sat nowhere. Despite the fact that we worked till midnight every night getting it through Parliament, it wasn't implemented until years later because of the regulations. So yes, indeed, there should be, and I don't know if there is, in all honesty, a deadline date for the regulations, and in the regulations we must know, or it must be stipulated somewhere, that attendance registers, etc., minutes are provided directly to this committee for oversight process.
Any other member? Right, thank you. Let's go to the drafting team just to deal with those issues. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think the answers came out during the discussion because the regulations provide for the functioning and meeting procedure of the Critical Infrastructure Council. So the functioning part thereof should cover the manner in which this is brought to the attention of this committee. Firstly and secondly, it would be the function of the Chair to bring that to the attention of the of this committee. Then also when one looks at clause 7.6, the council must submit a report to the minister within 3 months after the end of each financial year regarding the activities of the council, particulars pertaining to the number of declarations, including the names of the critical infrastructure, C, particulars pertaining to any limitations or revocation as critical infrastructure, D, the level and extent of public-private sector cooperation, and E, any other matter that may impact on the protection of critical infrastructure or the functioning of the council once again. So one would expect that that report will also set out those issues.
Thank you, Brigadier. Honourable Mutlongo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wonder maybe, Chairperson, from the legal team, if it won't be advisable to get, remember the council, to me, is an autonomous body, and as it reports, if there is some kind of failure in terms of consequences, I think maybe if there can be a drafting of that, so that we can be able, Chairperson, to avoid a kind of factional battles fought by amongst members of the council, whereby then if I don't want you, Chairperson, I just use whatever mechanisms, because I know that I can actually then fake the report to the committee. I think some consequence management must actually be established in order to empower the minister and the committee over that person who reports, so that we don't sit here being given a fake information about the functioning of the committee when everything has fallen apart. We then come to know the truth that this is what actually then went wrong. I think there must be some kind of benchmark or tailoring in of the consequence management so that people don't break away with matter. We have seen, Chairperson, how these things work. When member, particularly those, as you can see, there are quite a number of people, particularly from the state organs here, who will at times bring their own garbage and do things as they wish, and break away with matter at the end of the day. There must be clear consequence management. Yes.
Member Honourable Robert Lacani.
Chair, I thought that the question that Honorable Carl Barnett posed was dealt with. And however, the one part that was not answered is the speed in which the regulations will be finalized. And then we can proceed. I think that other hypothetical views, I think we should get to that stage later. For now, I think let's concentrate on getting this through.
Give the drafting team opportunity. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 27, 6 specifically says any regulation necessary for the immediate implementation of the Act must be promulgated to coincide with the coming into operation of the Act. Members will remember that previously it read within 3 months of coming into operation. It has been amended by the committee to read must be promulgated to coincide with the coming into operation of the Act.
Thank you very much. I think that deals with that issue sufficiently. Honourable Carla Barnard.
Is that not going to, and I don't recall the committee having changed that, but will that not put us in the position we've seen previous bills in? Okay, the bill will not be implemented until such time as the regulations are done. The regulations will take 5 years. Fine. Once we've all broken our backs getting this thing through, it'll sit for 5 years and not be implemented, or until such time as someone gets around to the regulations eventually. So that's actually setting it up for failure. Was there a particular reason? I don't recall that the committee, I don't know, I don't even recall hearing it. Change that from 3 months to whenever?
Remember on this issue? Brigitte? Honourable,
yes, you're welcome. Honourable Bushlongo? No, Chairperson, I concur 100% with Honourable Kola Panagi. I don't think that it will be correct, Chairperson, to relegate his responsibility to a regulation which is of a lesser capacity than the Act itself. Remember, say, for example, a person, Chairperson, or they commit a serious offense which even puts the lives of our people at risk, then you find that this thing is not even, which is what you can refer as a state terrorism. Now, you cannot actually then use the bill to control that. I think the Act must be able to actually put some measures in order to protect the citizens. Let's try to find out from the legal gurus to say, how do we tailor in? Yes, of course, the regulation will then talk of the administrative measures that will have to be followed. But then the Act must then be able to actually then put measures that actually then cap escalation, particularly by members of local. Otherwise, this level of impunity in our country is largely rooted on this particular thing. The regulation, yes, I agree, Chairperson. Say, for example, if a person has stolen something, the regulation will tell you that, no, if you have stolen so much money, this is the penalty that you will look at. But then the Act will actually mean to say that you definitely need to be punished in one way or the other. Then the regulation deals with the details.
I wonder if you or someone or whoever could just run through whatever the argument was that had the committee agreeing or deciding to remove a deadline and make it an open-ended date for implementation. I don't know. We were discussing, neither of us can recall when that decision was taken. But there must have been a reason that convinced everybody that it was the right thing to do. But I can't for the life of me think what that reason was. You had it as 3 months, and this committee has taken the deadline and thrown it away, which I find inconceivable. So there must have been a good reason. There's lots of nodding going on. Maybe someone can tell us what the decision was.
I mean, we can deal with it when we come to that clause later, but let's give Honorable Ramadan an opportunity as well.
Yeah, no, I think perhaps my suggestion is that we're going to start on that issue. Maybe we should proceed, if we want to, at some point, if we are not happy with that clause and we get to it, then we can propose probably the amendment or of that particular that satisfy the committee, rather than to have a discussion at the tail end of it now.
We come to 27, and we will ask also the content advisor and the researchers just to maybe go back, to their notes. I don't know, Brigadier, if there's anything at this stage, or the state law advisor will come to the rescue. Thank you, sir.
No, Chair, just to say, the Clause 32, Chair, says the Act comes into operation on a date determined by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. So you cannot have regulations that come into effect before the Act comes into effect. So it's logical that the regulations should coincide. Their commencement date should coincide with the date of commencement of the Act. Thanks.
Honourable Kalabana.
The regulations can certainly be ready. Of course they're not passed before the Act, but they must be ready so that the Act can be passed simultaneously. But what we've had is, because the regulations took so long to draw up, nothing was implemented. It might be passed. You can pass an Act. It doesn't mean you have to implement it. It can sit on a shelf for another 5 years while they fiddle with the regulations. And that's exactly what has happened before. So, sorry, but that's not how it works in the real world of this that we work in. Because that Act, the Secondhand Goods Bill, languished for 3 years while they fiddled with the regulations. Nothing was implemented until the regulations were done. That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Honorable Ramalekani, yes.
No, Chair. I certainly do not understood the state law advisor to be suggesting that the regulation will only be drafted once the bill has been signed by a president. However, what I think I understand him to be saying is that on the shelf, there will be a draft regulations ready. Once the president has, in fact, signed the bill, simultaneously, the regulation will then become operational. In other words, if there is 90 days between that period and the president has sent to the bill, the regulation will be ready. So I understood to be saying it's simultaneous. So I don't know the Honorable Colonel's point. So my understanding, maybe they should correct me. I'm understanding them to be saying there will be a regulation ready. By the time the president signed this bill, if it's 90 days, they would have been ready with the regulations. Otherwise, they're going to draft it, keep it then ready for it to be so that the act can't function unless regulations is done. Yeah, so that's what I understand them to be saying.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Lekana. The researcher, has now did some research while the debate was on, and it seems that it says here the majority, if not all, of the regulations contained in Clause 29 are necessary for the immediate implementation of the Act. Then the question was the committee should consider whether the 3 months allocated for the promulgation of the regulations allowed for sufficient time for the drafting of regulations. And then NEDLAC indicated that the Act and regulation should commence simultaneously. So that was the big argument. You can't wait with this because the activities of the various committees is dependent on the work, what is in the regulation. So that was the rationale for that. Right, colleagues, can we maybe continue? I don't know, Brigadier, you've got any more input?
Chairperson, maybe we can, we will refer to it when we get to that, to Section 27.
Right. Right, members, if we maybe then can deal with that under Clause 27. I think we were last on 14 on page 8. I'll 14, the minister may, after due process by the National Assembly, remove a member of the council appointed in terms of subsection 8 from the office on account of A, absence from 3 consecutive meetings without good cause, B, misconduct, incapacity or incompetence, C, becoming disqualified as contemplated in section 5, or D, any other lawful reason. 15, the minister may suspend a member where there are reasonable grounds to do so until the process contemplated in subsection 14 is finalized. 16, the minister may request the cabinet member responsible for institution which represented on the council, as contemplated in subsection 2b, to nominate another representative for appointment to substitute the institution's representative in the council. 17, members of the council who are appointed in terms of subsection 8 may be paid such remuneration allowances as the minister may, with the written concurrence, and that was also included now, of the Minister of Finance determine. 18, the deputy chairperson referred to in subsection 11 must, when the chairperson is absent or unable to perform his or her duties, act in his or her stead, and when so acting, exercise or perform any function of the chairperson. So, colleagues, that deals with clause 4. Yes, Honourable.
Thanks, Chair. I wasn't sure initially whether you want comments at the end of a clause or if we can stop you midway. But it was just two textual edits, really, that just jumped out at me. And it's the kind of thing that might not get picked up in proofreading after this process. In clause 4, sub-clause 3, we need to delete that underscore that is between that and include, just so it doesn't end up in the final text. And then in clause 13, clause 13, after subsection 7, I think because it's part of the same sentence, that needs to become comma provided, not a new sentence. Does that make sense?
Honourable Bailey, State Laws Advisor.
Okay. What Honourable Mbele has pointed out in clause 13 after subsection 7, in subclause 13 after subsection 7, should be a colon instead of a comma, Chair, because it's a proviso. So.
Members, thank you for that, Honourable Bailey. Thank you. So those changes will be made. Honourable Amalkane.
Well, that, I think, Chair, we have to move up adoption on that, with the proviso that those corrections will be effected.
In that version, second Honourable Mulabatsi. Thank you, members. So we move to clause 5. The disqualification from appointment as a member of the Critical Infrastructure Council. 5. A person is disqualified from being appointed or continuing to serve as a member of the Critical Infrastructure Council contemplated in section 42B and C, if he or she A, is not a South African citizen, B, does not have a valid top security clearance certificate issued to him or her by the State Security Agency, C, is an unrehabilitated insolvent, D, has in the preceding 20 years been sentenced in the Republic or elsewhere to imprisonment without the option of a fine, E, has a direct or indirect financial or personal interest in any critical infrastructure, or F, has been removed from a position or an office of trust, or G, is by virtue of any other law disqualified from being appointed. That is then clause 5. Thank you, Honourable Ramakani. Are you seconding Honourable Kalubana? No.
Just wanted the definition of what an office of trust is. It's obviously a legal term, but I have no idea what it means.
Trustee of a trust. But let's hear from the state law otherwise, yes.
Thanks, Chair. It's in a position, Chair, where you were put in a position that is that requires trust. For instance, you'd be a curator, you may spend monies, and you are removed, or you are an accountant, and you're removed from that position. So it's a position that requires trust, or you're a board member, and you misappropriated funds, and so on. So you are removed from that position. So it's an imposition that requires trust.
The first part, which reads that a person who has been removed from a position or an office of trust, so removed from any position. So if you were the head of the school cricket team and somebody else wanted the position and so they kicked you out, that disqualifies you. It's a position. What is the definition of a position? Could be anything. Is that not a tad broad?
Honourable Member, Honourable Kane, and then we'll come back to the team.
I think in a context, if the bill is read in a context here, it will maybe refer to a misdemeanor, in particular with somebody holding a position in relation to this particular bill. It doesn't really refer to something else other than for specificness here in terms of the air. So for example, taking the comment that Honourable Colobanat talks about, maybe somebody is principal of the school or the principal of the school, and then there was money paid into the trust account for school, and the money was then squandered by the principal, and of course that's going to be a historical issue. It's going to be part of whether that person has maybe have a trust that can perform certain functions, that will basically count. But I'm saying in the context of this particular bill, I'm seeing that in the context, not necessarily outside of any other position. So certainly if there's been corruption, somebody was involved in it and removed from that as a result of that, that will count. It will maybe disqualify as a result of that. That's the context in which I will read this.
Honourable Mbele, you raised your hand.
Thanks, Chair. I think we just need the explicit clarity around this. So firstly, it might be useful to have it in the definitions as to what an office of trust refers to. I mean, you know, from my sort of slightly amateur perspective, I'm assuming that it's referring to an office where you have some kind of fiduciary duty, and if that's the case, then that must be put in black and white, or whatever the case might be. And the other ambiguity is, again, it's a textual one, but the location of that word position could either mean just position standalone, or position of trust, or office of trust. I'm assuming it's the former, but it can be misinterpreted. So I think that's just the kind of ambiguity we need clarified.
For that input, maybe proposals to deal with that, the team.
Chief, I may just confer with my colleagues behind me, please.
Perhaps it should be position of trust or office of trust. Then that would solve it. But it can't be ambiguous in any way, shape, or form.
Honourable, yes. Ms. Longwe, and then Honourable Lakane, and then the team.
No, Chair. I understand the current issue, but I don't have too much misunderstanding of that. But what I wanted to get clarity from, I think, whilst you'll be legal gurus will be clarifying this, this question of removal of a person, I think if it can be amplified to say lawful removal, because a person can be removed, and that can actually then leave a stigma on a person. Say, for example, this thing that was being attempted by former Minister of Police on the Executive Director of IP. They wanted a man removed, but it wasn't lawful. If then a man was removed, then because you have been removed, then it means you are not actually liable to, or eligible to hold this particular, but it wasn't lawful. So I think maybe if they can actually then try to give us direction to a person side by side with that, so that it is a lawful removal, not that you've just been removed. Because any person, lawyers can be very technical on these matters, that you have been removed.
Redeployment.
No, thank you, Chair. Well, just two issues for me. The one that we on the F, and I think there's still some consultation there. Even if you were to take this 2-3 words out, you'll still achieve the same meaning. If you were to take or an office, and you just remain position of trust, because position of trust is all-encompassing. It's an overall. So then you will achieve the same results. Two, on the Honourable point, again, the context here. The context is not, if you read from the top, is a disqualification for reasons. And the reasons are listed down. And those reasons, obviously, will be lawful reasons. Because for me, those reasons, if you are not a South African citizen, is a lawful reason. If you are disqualified because you did not have a top secret, you failed. In other words, that's a reason. You can't read it like that as a one part. You must read the whole thing together. So here there are disqualification reasons. So I don't think necessarily we need to do anything there. I think I agree with it as it stands, provided that we just take out those three words and then we move.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Letchia, the State Legal Advisor.
We agree, Chair. It was belt and braces. It's not necessary. So it can exist.
Thank you. So is it the Ramatlakane or is it the Kola Barnard amendment? Joint effort. No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Your input is appreciated because we want a good piece of legislation. So please, if there's anything, please come and vote. So, colleagues, yes, Brigadier.
Chair, just one issue, the word or in paragraph E, the last word or should also just be removed. It's at the end of the sentence, paragraph E.
Right, can we get a proposal for the amended clause 5? Everybody happy with that? Thank you, Honourable Bonabatsi, seconder, Honourable Ramatakani. Thank you. Colleagues, we will then go to funding and remuneration in clause 6. The expenses incurred in connection with the exercise of the powers, the carrying out of the duties and the performance of the functions of the Critical Infrastructure Council, including the remuneration expenses, contemplated in Section 4.7 must be defrayed from the budget allocation of the Civilian Secretariat for the Police Service established in terms of Section 4.1 of the Civilian Secretariat for the Police Service Act 2011, Act No. 2 of 2011, as voted in terms of the Annual Division of Revenue Act. I know we discussed that in detail. Yeah, Honourable Kolobana.
I don't know if you need it for the record, but you said 4.1. It's 4.17. I don't know if there's a recorded record that has to be in order to make this whole process legal, but if you might want to just correct that.
No, thank you for that. Is Anmul Ramatlakhani. Thank you for the proposal. Seconder? Sorry, Brigadier, you want to stop the vote.
Sorry, Chair, just before the vote. The first reference to 4, Section 4.17, refers to the members who may be paid remuneration. That's in the line 48. But then the Section 4.1 in line 50 refers to the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service Act, not this Act.
Can I take that delayed seconder? Thank you, Honourable Nabazi. Thank you very much. Thank you, members. We will then go to Clause 7, Functions of the Critical Infrastructure Council. 7.1. The functions of the critical infrastructure, that's also a new clause, totally new clause that we have processed during the deliberations. 7.1, the functions of the Critical Infrastructure Council are to A, subject to subsection 2, consider any application for declaration of infrastructure as critical infrastructure referred to in chapter 3, and make recommendations on such application to the minister. B, subject to subsection 3, approve guidelines regarding Roman 1, the assessment of an application contemplated in sections 18 and 19. Roman 2, the implementation of the prescribed system for categorization of critical infrastructure in a low risk, medium risk, or high risk category referred to in section 27. Roman 3, policies, protocols, and standards regarding any matter necessary to achieve the purpose of this act, and Roman 4, the promotion of public-private sector cooperation in the protection of critical infrastructure, and C, perform any other functions which may be assigned to the Council by the Minister. 2, when making a recommendation to the Minister on an application referred to in subsection 1A, the Council must consider the following before making such a recommendation. A, the requirements referred to in section 16.2A. B, any factor contemplated in section 17, C, any report or submission that must accompany such application, D, an appropriate risk categorization of the infrastructure in question in accordance with the prescribed system of categorization referred to in section 27, and E, any conditions for such declaration as contemplated in section 21.1C. 3, when approving guidelines referred to in section 1B, the Council must consider the following. A, any submission by the National Commissioner as contemplated in section 9.2. B, any relevant submission by any other person having an interest in the protection of critical infrastructure. C, any budgetary implications related to critical infrastructure protection. D, any other matter that may promote the purpose of this Act or affect the implementation thereof. 4, the guidelines referred to in subsection 1B must include guidelines regarding A, the identification and management of risk relating to critical infrastructure, B, the establishment and maintenance of a legitimate, effective, and transparent process for identifying and declaring infrastructure as critical infrastructure, and C, the procedures to coordinate the functions and activities of government departments and the private sector insofar as those functions and activities are performed to achieve the purpose of this Act. 5, in addition to any function contemplated in this section, the Council may A, advise the Minister on evaluation, monitoring and reviewing of the implementation of policy, protocols, standards and legislation related to the protection of critical infrastructure, and B, make recommendations to the Minister on any function of the Minister contemplated in Section 22 or Section 23. 6, the Council must submit a report to the Minister within 3 months after the end of each financial year regarding A, the activities of the Council during the preceding financial year, B, particulars pertaining to the number of declarations as critical infrastructure, including the names of the critical infrastructure, C, particulars pertaining to any limitations or revocation as critical infrastructure, and D, the level and extent of public-private sector cooperation, and E, any other matter that may impact on the protection of critical infrastructure or the functioning of the Council. Colleagues, that is Clause 7. Proposal, Honourable Ramatakane, a seconder? Honourable Molabatsi, thank you. Colleagues, we move to Clause 8, the meetings of the Critical Infrastructure Council. That's also a new clause that was included during the deliberation process. 8.1, the Critical Infrastructure Council must meet at least quarterly. 2, the Secretary for the Police Service must ensure that secretarial services are provided to the Critical Infrastructure Council. 3, the Chairperson may at any time convene a special meeting of the Council and must also convene such a meeting at the written request of the Minister. Then, colleagues, at the top of page 10, 4, if at least 3 members of the Council request a special meeting in writing, the Chairperson must convene such a meeting within 7 days after receiving the request. 5, 7 members of the Council, which must include the Chairperson or Deputy Chairperson, will constitute a quorum at any meeting of the Council. 6, decisions of the Council must be taken by majority of votes, and in the case of equality of votes, the Chairperson has a casting vote in addition to his or her deliberate vote. Clause 8, proposal, Honourable Ramatakane, seconder, Honourable Molabatsi. Thank you, colleagues. Then we move to Part B, functions of the National Commissioner. That's also a new clause. Total new clause. Colleagues, 9. 1, the National Commissioner must establish and maintain the administrative system and proceedings necessary for the implementation and enforcement of this Act. B, support the Critical Infrastructure Council and the Minister in the administration of this Act. And C, effect cooperation between the South African Police Service, other organs of state and the private sector insofar as it relates to the protection of critical infrastructure. 2, the functions of the National Commissioner are to develop uniform standards, guidelines and protocols for approval by the Council regarding A, the manner in which Roman 1, infrastructure must be identified, categorized and declared critical infrastructure, Roman 2, any physical security assessment of critical infrastructure and potential critical infrastructure is conducted and coordinated between government departments, and 3, information which may be relevant to critical infrastructure protection is shared between the relevant stakeholders. And then Roman 4, any prescribed committee or forum must function and report, and B, structures and mechanisms to facilitate coordination in and management of the protection of critical infrastructure. Then 3, the National Commissioner must A, consider applications from a person in control of an infrastructure for declaring that infrastructure as critical infrastructure, B, conduct or facilitate any physical security assessment of critical infrastructure or potential critical infrastructure, C, make recommendations to the Council on the declaration and risk categorization of such critical infrastructure or potential critical infrastructure, D, evaluate, monitor and review the application and operational effectiveness of policy, guidelines or legislation related to the protection of critical infrastructure and advise the Council accordingly. E, evaluate and review physical security assessments, resilient reports and any designation as critical infrastructure and advise the Council accordingly. F, consider any draft of a prescribed security policy or plan submitted to his or her office. G, issue directions regarding the procedures to be followed at the meetings of any prescribed committee or quorum, and H, compile and submit quarterly reports to the Council, which must at least include 1, particulars of the related activities of the South African Police Service during the preceding quarter, Roman 2, particulars of the number of applications for declaration of infrastructure as critical infrastructure, Roman 3, particulars of the level and extent of government department participation in the functioning of the committee or forum, and Roman 4, the level and extent of public-private sector cooperation in the functioning of the committee or forum. 4, the National Commissioner may, in the prescribed form, apply for the declaration of government infrastructure as critical infrastructure. Colleagues, that is then clause 9. We've got a proposal. State legal advisory, what?
Can I propose, Chair, on 3A, that we instead of saying consider applications, to say consider an application? Yes,
sir. Good. There's a proposal that we then include an application and delete the S. Is there anything else there? Then the amended clause 9. Proposal Honourable Robert Akhani, second Honourable Mabuja. Thank you. Colleagues, then we move to clause 10, the designation of inspectors. 10.1, the National Commissioner may designate police officials who are in possession of an appropriate security clearance certificate, experience in infrastructure protection, on at least the rank level of a warrant officer as inspectors. 2, the National Commissioner must issue each inspector designated in terms of subsection 1 with a certificate in the prescribed form stating that the police officials has been designated as an inspector in terms of this Act. So, colleagues, that is clause 10. Yes,
Chair, Bragadia. I might just point out on the first line after police officials, the words who are in possession of an appropriate security clearance certificate was inserted during the deliberation.
That. Can we get a proposal? Honourable Ramadakane, second Honourable Mabuja. Thank you, colleagues. Then we move, colleagues, to clause 11, the functions of inspectors. 11, an inspector may at any reasonable time conduct an inspection at a critical infrastructure to A, verify whether the person in control of that critical infrastructure took the steps to secure the critical infrastructure contemplated in sections 24.1, B, verify any information relating to the declaration as critical infrastructure as well as the physical security report contemplated in section 18, C, review the physical security assessment and evaluate the status of the physical security of the critical infrastructure, D, verify compliance with this Act, and E, compile a report on the matters referred to in paragraphs A to D for the National Commissioner and the person in control of the critical infrastructure. 2, an inspector must preserve or aid in preserving confidentiality with regard to all matters concerning the operational activities of the critical infrastructure that may come to his or her knowledge in the performance of his or her duties and may not communicate any such matter to any person except the National Commissioner, or unless a court of law orders such communication, or insofar as such communication is necessary to properly carry out the inspection. B, carry out his or her duties and exercise his or her powers. Roman 1, subject to any prescribed procedure. Roman 2, in accordance with any directives issued by the Minister. Roman 3, in a manner that does not hamper or endanger the operational activities of the critical infrastructure where an inspection is being concluded, and Roman 4, with strict regard to decency and order. Yes, Honourable Kalabarnat, yes.
I had in clause 11 a change that should have been inserted, I think. An inspector prior to exercising any power in terms of this chapter must identify himself or herself to the person in control or the security manager of the critical infrastructure in question and must produce the certificate issued by the National Commissioner. That should have gone in from line 15, and I don't see it. Oh,
All right, bring it here.
Chair, that was indeed inserted as sub-clause 8 to clause 11. Sub-clause 10, my apologies, sub-clause 10.
Right, thank you for that, honourable members. I think we're in 11.3. Yes, thank you. Where the person in control of a critical infrastructure fails to or refuses to allow an inspector access to the critical infrastructure concerned, the inspector may issue the prescribed compliance notice in the prescribed manner to the person in control of the critical infrastructure, requiring of that person to provide the inspector with access to the critical infrastructure within 7 days for the purpose of conducting the inspection. Then in 4, if an inspector has reasonable grounds to believe that any method or practice of safeguarding or securing the critical infrastructure in question or any failure or refusal to comply with this act may negatively affect the physical security measures of that critical infrastructure, the inspector may, by written notice in the prescribed form and manner, order the person in control of that critical infrastructure to take, within a period specified in the notice, such steps in respect of the security of the critical infrastructure as may be specified in the notice. Then in 5, despite subsection 4, the minister may take or cause steps to be taken in respect of the security of any critical infrastructure when credible information on oath is brought to his or her attention to the effect that A, the person in control of critical infrastructure fails or refuses to 1. Comply with the provisions of this act or take the steps contemplated in the notice referred to in subsection 4. B, the failure or refusal contemplated in paragraph A creates a substantial risk that the critical infrastructure in question cannot be secured in the event of a threat, and C, in the event of a threat, a failure to secure the critical infrastructure in question is likely to cause an imminent disruption of Roman 1, the functioning or stability of the economy of the Republic, Roman 2, the maintenance of law and order, 3, the provision of basic public services, or 4, national security. Then at the top of page 12, 6, despite the power of the minister to take or cause steps to be taken in respect of the security of any critical infrastructure as contemplated in subsection 5, the minister with, when exigent circumstances dictate that the provisions of subsection 3 or 4 be dispensed with, may comply to a court having jurisdiction for A, an order compelling the person in control of critical infrastructure 1 to comply with any provision of this act, and to cease contravening a provision of this Act. Roman 2, to comply with any notice issued under subsection 3, or take any other reasonable steps necessary to secure the critical infrastructure in question, or 3, to cease any method or practice of safeguarding or securing the critical infrastructure in question that may cause a serious breach of the physical security measures of that critical infrastructure, or B, any other order the court considers appropriate. Then in 7, a notice referred to in subsection 3 and 4 must be given to the person in control of the infrastructure or a person designated by the person in control of the critical infrastructure or, in the absence, the most senior employee available at the critical infrastructure to whom the notice can be issued. 8. The minister may, by notice in the Gazette, in consultation with the head of a public entity or statutory body, either generally or subject to such conditions as may be specified in the notice, extend the powers provided for this section to any competent person employed by a public entity contemplated in Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act 1999, Act No. 1 of 99, or any other statutory body if that person is a peace officer contemplated in Section 1(1) of the Criminal Procedure Act 1997, Act No. 51 of 1997. 9. The notice referred to in Subsection 8 must set out A, the extent to and the conditions under which such persons are extended to such person, are extended to such person, and B, the extent to which the directives contemplated in subsection 2B, Roman 2, are applicable to such persons in the exercise of such powers. And then 10, an inspector prior, that's the matter Honourable Kalabana raised, an inspector prior to exercising any power in terms of this chapter must identify himself or herself to the person in control or the security manager of the critical infrastructure in question and must produce the certificate issued by the National Commissioner referred to in Section 10.2. Honourable members, can we ask Honourable Ramadakane, seconder Honourable Mulabatsi. Colleagues, at this stage, I'm going to give the microphone to the content advisor to continue as I'm going to take a bit of...
Thank you. Part C, committees, exemption and delegations, ad hoc and standing committees. 12.1, the National Commissioner may, when he or she deemed it necessary or expedient to obtain advice or assistance in order to perform any function contemplated in Section 9.2 or 3, establish any ad hoc or standing committee to assist him or her. 2, a committee established under subsection 1 may establish an ad hoc working groups to assist in the performance of its functions. 3, any committee or working group established under subsections 1 and 2 may include persons who are not police officials. 4, the National Commissioner may designate a police official who is a member of a committee or working group as chairperson thereof. 5, the committee is accountable to the National Commissioner. 6, the advice contemplated in subsection 1 does not bind the National Commissioner or absolve him or her from his or her responsibility under this Act. 7,
Chair.
Yes, Brigadier.
If I may just interrupt, Dr. Chairperson, your voice. Clause 4 is a new clause. The National Commissioner must designate a police official, but then in subclause 6, I see the amendment agreed upon wasn't correctly inserted there. It must read the advice or assistance contemplated in subsection 1.
The Brigadier, members, so the amendment, the advice or assistance contemplated in subsection 1. Thank you for that.
Okay.
Dr. Guinness, you can continue.
I think I was at 7. Let me just do 6 again. 6, the advice or assistance contemplated in subsection 1 does not bind the National Commissioner or absolve him or her from his or her responsibility under this Act. 7, a member of a committee is disqualified from being appointed or continuing to serve as a member of the committee if he or she, A, has in the preceding 20 years been sentenced in the Republic or elsewhere to imprisonment without an option of fine, B, does not have a valid security clearance certificate issued to him or her by the State Security Agency, C, is an unrehabilitated insolvent, D, is not a South African citizen, or E, is by virtue of any other law disqualified from being appointed.
This business of if they've been sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine. So if you are sent to prison, but you're given a fine of 100,000 rand and you can afford to pay it, then that's fine. You can now be a fabulous member of this committee, but you've committed some awful thing. I mean, I find it actually impossible that it's the same goes for MPs, that you can pay a fine and still be an MP having committed some terrible crime. So is that appropriate, or is that a standard legal out to let certain people in who shouldn't actually be in? I find it quite repugnant.
Well, Ramit Lakhani, thank you.
No, Chair, I'm not answering Honourable Korobana, but as far as I understand, and there's consistency here, is that the admission of guilt or paying a guilt does not disqualify you from being let me start where I am, from being a public rep or councillor or member of parliament. But where it become more serious, if there was no option of fine, then the disqualification clause then kick in. No, no, I'm just saying in terms in terms of why I said that this is, yes, now what I'm saying is that the point that I was just trying to make is that the my understanding is that it is like that in many other law. So there is a consistency in the application of law. So I think I was not finished until I was interrupted about that. But Chair, for me, I think that we're not done with that clause. I'll then reserve my point.
Yes, Chair, the wording in subclause 7, paragraph A, simply means if a court sentences a person to just imprisonment, the prosecutors speak about straight tronk. You know, if there's no option of a fine, then that person is disqualified. If there's an option of a fine, in a less serious case of a less serious offence, the court will always say 3 months or 3,000 rand. But in more serious cases, it will say 25 years without the option of a fine. And in those cases where the person had to literally serve a prison sentence, they will be disqualified.
Chair, we've just seen a case where you can be filmed beating up a woman, pay 100,000 rand and still be an MP. Is that, you consider maybe that to be a less offence? I don't. I think it's absolutely disgusting. And yet that's the sort of person you're saying is good enough to be on this committee. Really? Is that really how we see it?
Yes, Honourable Kalabar, Honourable Ramatakani.
Sure, no, Chair, I think that the my suggestion, humble suggestion, is that we should proceed, because the issue that it has come through us, we have gone through this clause before, and we have approved it. If there is a proposal that Honourable Colomar wants to put on the table, maybe that will be a different issue. But I think that then we must entertain that. For now, in terms of consistency of law, we would probably not come with because it's going to be in conflict with a number of other existing law. So it would simply not be in a correct, good law that we are making. So if we want to stick to the making a good law, let's stick to that until there is an repeal of that particular section in all the existing law in the Republic. In terms of feeling, we may have feelings, different feelings about it, but will that be what constitutes the law? I think not. So I think if there's a proposal, concrete proposal, let's entertain that. I think the Honourable Parliament has the right to do so. Let's do that, and then let's proceed.
Any other comments? Can we, yes, Dr. Guinness?
The Cyber Response Committee must function as a standing committee to advise the Council on any matter relating to information infrastructure. Close H.
We come to clause 13, but at this stage, to give you an option, you have to go to T. There's no option. You can't continue. So we'll come back after 15 minutes. Thank you.